Doing the impossible is not something you make happen. It's something that you allow to happen. After conducting over 10,000 personal and group coaching sessions over the last decade, author and personal coach Jason Dries has unlocked a simple yet effective formula to accept and create success in your life on the most basic, instinctive level. In his latest book, Do the Impossible, Jason gives readers access to the same life-changing principles he provides in his personal coaching sessions. Ready to embrace success as a state of being? In this exclusive listener offer, get your copy of Do the Impossible for 50% off from the publishers at Bigger Pockets. To get your copy of Do the Impossible for 50% off any format, go to www.biggerpockets.com/impossible50. That's 50% off any format, www.biggerpockets.com/impossible50.
I see them as just people. And so I think I don't necessarily need to lick them up and down. I also don't need to trash them either, right? I can sort of assess them very clearly. And I think that's a fair way to be. And I think that's one of the reasons they keep talking to me is because I don't treat them any different than I did before. I don't give them extra claps and I don't give them extra smacks necessarily unless they do something particularly egregious.
Welcome to On Brand with Donnie Deutsch. I am Donnie Deutsch, and this is the show dedicated to a simple premise that everybody, everything today is a brand. Every institution, every religion, every athlete, every entertainer, every company, every product. Look, if you got a Facebook page, you're a brand. A brand is a set of values and what you stand for. And what we do here is a couple of things. First, we break down what I call the brands of the week. These are the brands, the people and the things and the companies and the products and the leaders of the world that are kind of shaping where we're going, how we're getting there. And I kind of break down whose brand is up and whose brand is down based on what events of the past week. And we also talk to an iconic brand. We do an in-depth interview. And this week, we have a great guest, Kara Swisher. Kara is probably the world's leading technology journalist, all things technology, all things social media, writer for the New York Times, host of the fabulously, wildly successful podcast, Sway and Pivot. You're going to learn a lot today from Kara Swisher. You're really in for a treat here. Let's get to our brands of the week. And our first brand up or brand down is one big brand down and a partial brand up for Joe Biden. The brand down is Afghanistan. Now, look, you have to qualify this. Joe Biden didn't put us in Afghanistan. There are four presidents involved in this. His predecessor, Trump, wanted us out. Everybody wanted us out. The reason he gets a brand down is just there had to be an anticipation of the speed of which Afghanistan would fall. Nobody saw this coming. You know, he even gave a speech last week and said, this is not going to be Saigon with, you know, people getting lifted off the embassy and helicopters. Well, it is. They're not being lifted off the embassy, but people are hanging from planes. And there had to be a way to do this in a different way. I'm not a foreign policy expert, but I do know that there was misinformation and intelligence somehow. And look, this is 20 years. This is $100 billion. This is 3,000 lives. But what had already happened, we had already gotten it from 100,000 troops to 3,000 troops, and we had not had a fatality in 18 months. So you kind of go, what was the urgency to do this in a way? And look, we are a country that salutes winners and losers, and this makes Biden feel like he is tattooed with the loss of nation building in Afghanistan. It was a failure. We came, the whole point was to not set it up as a hotbed for terrorists post 9/11. It's going to be a hotbed, and what have we accomplished in 20 years, and the people we've left behind who've helped us and worked with us. So the decision to get out was not the wrong decision. Obviously, the way in which we did it, and he gets tarred with it, and it doesn't land on Biden. I mean, it doesn't land on Trump. It does not land on Obama. It does not land on Obama's predecessor. It lands on Biden. He gets the L for this, and this will be part of his presidency. So a big brand down for him, no matter how you slice it, from a perception point of view and a reality point of view. Look, a brand up domestically. You know, he got the bipartisan infrastructure bill. To get anything bipartisan in Washington today is just stunning in and of itself. $1.2 trillion, the biggest infrastructure, kind of something that's into our country's structure since the Great Depression. And that's a Herculean task to get 19 Republican senators to vote for a democratically sponsored bill. There you go. So domestic brand up, huge brand down for his brand. This will be, as you read in the history books, his fumbling or his administration's fumbling of the exit of Afghanistan will go down. We don't like to, this country doesn't operate that way. We don't go down with our heads down like that. And that's what happened in Vietnam. And it looks like it's happening here also. And this will be a real hurt, real ping to his brand. Brand down for Pfizer. This is kind of stunning in terms of the difference between the effectiveness of the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine. The study found that the Pfizer vaccine, this was a study done by the Mayo Clinic, was only 42% effective against infection in July. That's only 42% effective. That's pretty stunning. Overall, that from January till June, the Moderna vaccine was 86% effective, the Pfizer only 76% effective. The vaccine's effectiveness really dropped in July, when in Minnesota it had risen over 70%. Moderna was 76% effective against the infection. Pfizer was only 42%. In Florida, the risk of infection in July for people fully vaccinated with Moderna was about 60% lower than fully vaccinated with Pfizer. So whatever's happening with this Delta variant, you know, big brand up for Moderna, big brand down for Pfizer. I don't think it's going to affect Pfizer's overall pharmaceutical brand, but certainly a brand down, certainly in the month of July for effectiveness and for the first 6 months of this year. Brand up for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Brand up to the Terminator, who wants to terminate, I don't literally want to terminate, but terminate the thinking behind people who are anti-vaxxers or not feeling that they need to wear masks and things like that. He says, screw your freedom, because with freedom comes obligations and responsibilities. And he's right. He says, look, no one is going to tell me that I'm going to stop. You can't say, no one's going to tell me that I'm not going to stop here for the stop sign. I have to stop at this traffic. I'm going to drive right through it. Then you kill someone. It's your fault. And that's a great analogy. And, you know, with freedom comes responsibility. And I love that he's calling out people, calling them schmucks. They are schmucks. Someone who's not getting vaccinated right now, if you don't care about the person next to you and you don't understand we're part of a grand society and we're 330 million people strong and we all have responsibilities. We can't drive drunk. We can't scream fire in a movie theater. We have to get certain vaccines before we go to school. So the Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, there you go. I love it, buddy. On the flip side, a brand down for schmucky governor, I'll call him a schmuck, Governor Ron DeSantis. This is an interesting stat. This is why I included it. Ron DeSantis won in 2018 by 32,000 votes. More people have died now in Florida from COVID than the amount of people he won votes by. 39,000 plus people have died from COVID. Now, not every one of them is Ron DeSantis' fault, but certainly some of them. And so I want you to think about this. The amount of slim margin of victory. There's been more people that's died that's voted in favor of him. And I think that's an ironic, sad statistic. And, you know, he's being heralded as the second coming of Donald Trump. I don't know what the hell that means, the second coming. I thought there was only one coming, unfortunately. But he's barely beating Charlie Crist in the projected polls for the governor, rerunning the governorship in 2 years. So, or in 1 year. So it'll be interesting to see Ron DeSantis, what his future holds. And I think he will be stained as history will read the people who did not protect us carefully. Weird brand up for Mike Lindell, the pillow guy. It begrudges me to say this. You know, he just had his big symposium in Texas, I think it was San Antonio, where he was supposed to reveal that once and for all this data that was going to show that the Chinese stole the election for Joe Biden. And of course, he was reputed and it was a joke and he looked like a fool. Yet, we keep saying my pillow guy. And Google searches for my pillow guy and my pillow keep going up. So he is this lunatic, but he's realized the same. He's what Donald Trump has done is that get my name out there. And yes, a lot of the world think this guy is a complete fool and he is, and he's dangerous and but he's nothing more than a charlatan. I don't even believe that he necessarily even believes. Everybody goes, well, he believes and he's passionate. You know, I went on air and I criticized the Atlantic for giving him a big profile. Why are we even indulging this guy? Yep, what I want to undress him as is he's just a huckster. He gets his name out there. He said every time we don't call him Michael Lindell, we call him my pillow guy. There it is, my pillow, my pillow, my pillow. I said it five times. I'm a victim also. So brand down for being just a reprehensible human being, brand up from a very mercenary marketing point of view. His name keeps getting searched more and more, his company name. If your company name's getting searched, you're doing something right. Brand down again. Every week I've got a new brand down for Trump for a way he continues to grotesquely exploit his followers with new tchotchkes that he sells. This is great. He unveils the new MAGA hat that he personally designed. Now, this is the ones that are out there are not good enough. He says, this is a quote, You've always been one of my most loyal supporters, so I don't want you to have just any hat. I want you to have the MAGA hat that I personally hand-signed for you, Trump continued. As for hat itself, it's like its predecessor, but this time the cat exudes a more McDonald's mood. It make America great again. And it doesn't say make it great. It just says MAGA in gargantuan white letters outlined in very bright yellow with a red background for $40. This guy's just amazing. He just continues to just piss all over his followers and just take their money and literally say to them, the hat you have is not good enough. You need the new MAGA hat. And once again, not a fine line between Mike Lindell and Donald Trump. Brand down for Rudy Giuliani. How low can you go? And we know how low he's gone. He will forever be entrenched in our minds with his really cheap hair dye dripping down his face as he talked about the big lie. But now he's a member of Cameo. Now, I don't know if you know what Cameo is. Cameo is basically where mostly third and fourth rate celebrities go on. You can go on if you want. And if I was a member of Cameo, not that I am, you could go on and pay $5 or $100 or whatever the celebrity thinks they're worth. And I will make a customized message like happy birthday, Susie. It's great to see you. A minute or 2 minute message or anything you want. And Rudy Giuliani, if you want, he says, hi, it's Rudy Giuliani. I'm on Cameo. He says in a video post on the Cameo page, he says, if there's an issue you want to discuss or a story you'd like to hear or share with me or a greeting that I can bring to someone that would bring happiness to the day, I'll be delighted to do it. It can be arranged. We can talk through the magic of Cameo. Personalized videos from Giuliani will cost $199 each. So there we go. There we go. The future, the former America's greatest mayor, protected during 9/11, presidential candidate, advisor to kings, is now selling videos for $199 a month, obviously to pay for his legal fees. How low can you go, Rudy Giuliani? Rudy Giuliani has not found the bottom yet. Brand up for Major League Baseball. Brilliant marketing and Field of Dreams. You know, well known by now. This was last week. They built the corn. I don't know if Major League Baseball did, but yes, I guess it was Major League Baseball. Built the cornfield in Iowa, a duplicate of the one of my favorite movies of all time, Field of Dreams, the Kevin Costner built in Iowa, and magical movie. It's the one movie that still makes me cry at the end when he says to his father, hey, Dad, you want to have a catch? I get choked up every time. And basically, it just pumped such exciting life into baseball. It was the single biggest Yankees and White Sox played in this field in Iowa in front of 8,000 people. And almost 6 million viewers watched it. It was the biggest regular season watched baseball game in 15 years. And it was magical. What does that show us? It shows us we all want to go back a little bit. We all want we want a little warm and fuzzy, man. You know, no matter what side of the political aisle on, no matter what side of argument, is just seeing baseball played on a field in Iowa, Kevin Costner throwing out the first pitch, giving a speech, man. That stuff brings us all together. And Major League Baseball is going to do this every year. And I think it's going to, I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see the NBA having an NBA game in the Hickory Gym from Hoosiers. You know, these kinds of things that bring us together. I think it's Rob Manfred and, is it Rob Manfredi? Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball. I should know this. Kudos Major League Baseball for doing this. A brand, I don't know how to do this. Megan Rapinoe, who is, of course, the world-class soccer player, she was in Subway commercials. And this is going to be a brand sideways for Subway. I'm going to give them a brand respect. You know, Megan has been very political. She kneeled the national anthem at the Olympics, and as is her right. But she is a spokesperson for Subway. And the Subway franchisees are 22,000 Subway stores. And they fund the marketing program. If you own a franchise, you have to put in 4% into the marketing of all Subways. And a lot of them are up in arms and saying, we don't want this person to be our spokesperson. And I respect that. You know, it's one thing if you want to make a political statement, but then if you want to be in bed with a corporation or individuals of part of that corporation, they shouldn't have to necessarily live with your political ramifications. That's why a lot of times very political spokespeople don't. And if you're a mass product and there's something, you can't be more mass than Subway. 20,000 franchisees around Subway. I mean, it's just, you got to, if you're a Subway franchisee, you got to appeal to every walk of life. You know, a sandwich is a pretty mass product, if you will. So, you know, I think you have a right, if you're Megan, to do whatever stand you want, but I think you have a right as the franchisees to stand up and go, no, kneeling in the national anthem is not good for my personal business. It may be good for your personal brand, Megan. So I think Subway needs to reconsider that. It is, once again, you're representing a mass group of franchisees. And if I'm a franchisee, particularly in certain counties, that's not going to go well. Her hawking your product is not a good thing. So freedom for Megan, but freedom for the franchisees to speak up and say, no, you're not right for our brand. Brand up for heart, Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew, which has been one of the best curated brands over the years. I mean, there's a little bit of a dark side to it. That's they highly kind of caffeinated products. But this is, you know, where Pepsi was always Pepsi, choice of a new generation. Pepsi's not a new generation. But Mountain Dew has always been able to be the kind of youth cornerstone of that brand. And so what are they doing? They're being smart. They're going into the hard seltzer scene, you know. Mountain Dew, and talk about authenticity. Mountain Dew derives its name from an Appalachian term for moonshine. You know, it was first concocted in the Great Depression by Barney and Allie Hartman, mixer of their favorite bourbon. So who better to do a hard seltzer? And hard seltzer is the fastest growing part of the light alcohol segment. It's got 5% alcohol in it. And look, if you're Mountain Dew and you're selling to kids, if you're selling energy drinks, well, why not sell hard seltzer? You're just expanding the brand. And from a branding point of view, it is a smart thing to do. I guess you could argue, wait a second, though, if Mountain Dew is a very young skewing brand, are we putting that name on a product that young people are? So I guess there is a questionable lining in there. But from a pure business branding point of view, it's a very smart thing to do. I would probably take a lot of shit for it. The more I think about it, yeah, that is a little bit of a, I'm thinking out loud and I'm changing my brand to a brand neutral because it's a brand up from a very smart business point of view. But is there a responsibility issue? If the average Mountain Dew drinker is of a certain age and it's like branding Pepsi alcohol. So I'm gonna stand back with a brand neutral from a corporate responsibility point of view. I question it from a corporate efficacy point of view. It's actually a very shrewd move. There is the conundrum of the commercial person who lives in the world of every person who's selling stuff. You're juggling that ball every single day. Oreo, brand up for Oreo. They've gotten a lot of kudos on the show, Oreo. This is really interesting. You know, everybody talks about experiential marketing. That's what you have to do with young people. Listen to this. They're turning their own packs of Oreos into a tool for creating mixtapes. They have a promotion. They're crafting. It's called Press Play to Win. And it basically is, it integrates the brand's packaging with AI technology to bring the act of creating a mixtape into the digital world. With the new packs, customers can use their smartphones to scan the logo and gain access to a digital experience that includes sharing online mixtapes with friends. That's intense. That's crazy. The world has passed me by. But so basically you buy up some Oreos, you scan the logo, you get to create mixtapes with other people. That is the definition of experiential marketing. Three brand ups for three different fast food chains. Taco Bell, there's going to be a touchless Taco Bell. It's the future of drive-thrus. Basically now, three out of every in a Brooklyn Park, Minnesota Taco Bell is an experiment. Three are of the four drive-thru lanes are going to be dedicated to just pure mobile delivery orders. You scan a QR code when they place their order, then you pull forward and you receive the food, and the food is delivered from an elevated kitchen above versus a priority lift system similar to the pneumatic tubes used in bank branches. So it squishes down, so there's no person you're talking to. There's no exchange of anything. It is humanless. That's the good news. That's the bad news. You know, I'm a little old school, and all of this technology that's putting us to the place where there's just less and less human interaction, what is that going to have for us in the future? And I don't know. As I said, from a business point of view, it's a smart thing. It's efficient. But I don't know. I like going, hey, I'll take my burrito with whatever. Wendy's also, 700 ghost kitchens. What these fast food places are doing, so much of their business now is ordered online and not ordered when you go, people want it delivered through DoorDash and whatnot. So instead of building expensive Wendy's that have to deliver it, they're building 700. They're just kitchens. You know, there's not going to be any logos on the outside. You won't even know where, you won't know where you're getting your Wendy's from, a Wendy's down on the corner versus a Wendy's in an industrial park. And that's to save money on real estate and whatnot. And makes sense. If you're ordering it online and you're not having the experience, why does the company need to waste money on all the experiential stuff to build around it? So you don't know where you're getting your Wendy's from, but it's certainly the future of fast food and so many bricks and mortar places as more and more of their business goes digitally ordered. Brand up to the South Park guys. They now claim we have fuck you money. Yes, you do. Trey Parker and Matt Stone became billionaires in their new deal with Comedy Central, with Paramount Plus, $900 million deal with Viacom, CBS, to make more South Parks and to make more streaming movies. They were ahead of the game. They negotiated the deal way back in 2007, just 2 years after the creation of YouTube, that they get a 50% of stake of all future online deals for the show. For example, when WarnerMedia tossed a huge pile of money, $500 million, into the mix to secure exclusive stream rights of South Park for HBO Max, Parker and Stone got half. So in 2007, before anybody knew what the hell was going on with all this online stuff and streaming, they had in their contract, we get half of everything streaming going forward. So two smart dudes, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Big brand up for Robin, Batman and Robin. Here you go. In the latest Batman comic, Robin is dropping personal news. In the latest installment of Batman Urban Legends, he's bisexual. That's right. The world is great. The world has become a great place. Tim Drake is the current DC character who fights crime as Robin. When the sixth installment of the comic book dropped Tuesday, the story ended with Tim saying, yes, he's going on a date with a guy named Bernard Dowd. Robin had this light bulb moment of fighting side by side with Bernard. And Bernard says, I'm hoping you would, Tim Drake. Do you want to go on a date with me? And I think it's great. There you go. I mean, what else do you need to know? We can't make advancements as far as, you know, whether it's in the world of race, the next Superman in the movies is going to be black. And why shouldn't there be a bisexual or a gay superhero or a sidekick to a superhero? So there you go. So thumbs up to DC Comics, thumbs up to Batman, thumbs up to Robin to coming out as bisexual. I love that. And one or two more. Big brand up for casinos. This is very counterintuitive. In-person gambling is lifting the U.S. casino to the second best quarter in their history, taking in $13.6 billion. That's amazing. This is still post-COVID. So this is just when, if it's the second quarter, it would be March through June, March, April, May, June, right? April, May, June, which is still, we were just recently coming out, you know, but people are going to casinos. That just shows you the pent-up demand. That's crazy. Post-pandemic, second biggest quarter in casinos history. That says a lot. Big brand down for Southwest, American, and Delta Airlines as opposed to the brand up for United. United making their people who work there get vaccinated. Southwest, American, and Delta, you don't have to get vaccinated. Look, I've said this before. This is on corporate America to get this right. You got to make your employees get vaccinated. That's the way this all happens. So brand down for Southwest, American, and Delta. And finally, a brand up for cats. Not the play, but just cats in general, felines. I'm a dog guy. I have six dogs. Yes, I have six dogs. I have two labs, two bulldogs, a Yorkie, and a poodle. The Yorkie and poodle were not on my watch. My kids talked me into them. I'm a big dog guy. Not to knock little dogs. But the amazing thing is we think dogs have more sensitivity or more human-like than cats. Not human-like, but are more sensitive than cats. Cats seem to be more distant and aloof. Yet, in a study, this is very interesting, Oregon State study, it showed that a study on kittens modeled after previous research on dogs and babies, the study examined how kitten subjects reacted after spending time with their caretaker and then being left alone, then reuniting again. 64% of kittens seemed distraught when the human left the room, and yet that's 6% higher than dogs. So it seemed if the kittens had more of a parental attachment to their owners than dogs did. There you go. Big brand up for cats. Who knew? And now let's get to our interview with the great Kara Swisher. I want to talk to you about Vivino. I love a good glass of wine. Most nights have enjoyed just a nice glass of wine when I get home from work to unwind a little bit. And I love trying new varieties. And wines in my local store sometimes don't carry them. And that's why I use Vivino. If you're a wine person, if you're a novice, or even if you're a very sophisticated wine drinker, Vivino is for you. It's the world's biggest online wine marketplace. They're also the largest online wine community with 50 million users who have rated and reviewed just about every wine. Vivino carries all my favorites. I mean, plus they suggest exciting new things. So it's one thing when I go on and I get the ones I like, but then I kind of use their suggestions and it's pretty cool. And their app, everything you need to know about wine and so much more right in your hand. You can see all the ratings and reviews. You can leave your own. The favorite thing is to do is to scan a bottle while I'm shopping in a store and seeing what Vivino users say about it. So I can basically, even if I'm in a store, I go on, I use the app, I see what it's about. So it's really a great place to just get all your wine and learn about wine. I've really stepped up my wine game thanks to Vivino. Give them a try. I know you're going to love it. Go to vivino.com/Donny and use code Donny, D-O-N-N-Y, at checkout to save 20% on your first order up to 200%. That's Vivino, VIVINO.com/Donny, code Donny, D-O-N-N-Y, to save 20% on your first order of up to $200. Vivino.com/Donny, code Donny, see site for details, terms apply. Vivino. All right, I want to talk to you about Talkspace. And this is important. This is an important product. You know, everybody has rough moments. I've had them. Everybody've had them when, you know, something seemed overwhelming and then you talk to somebody and it wasn't that big of a deal, or you were in a very emotional or a down state or a confused state and you reached out and you talked to somebody and it made you feel better. That's happened to me. That's happened to everybody. And this is where Talkspace comes in. Talkspace makes it easy to match with a licensed therapist and schedule live video sessions all from the comfort of your device. You can start messaging your therapist the same day you sign up. And the Talkspace app makes it easy to connect with your licensed therapist on your schedule without having to wait weeks before your next appointment. You can go anywhere and take your therapist with you. So it connects you with the right therapist. It's you know, you don't have to kind of do research on your own or go into somebody's office. If you need help and maybe you're not sure where to go, Talkspace is the place to go to find the right therapist for you. Whether you're a parent, student, millennial, or just someone having a hard day, Talkspace can provide the support and help you feel better with a single message. Talkspace works around your schedule at your convenience. Send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist on the app. Schedule live video sessions with your licensed therapist from anywhere. Whether you experience depression, anxiety, or other problems, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you through any issue. Thousands of licensed therapists to match up with you. Start feeling better with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code Donny. That's $100 off when you use code Donny at Talkspace.com. Look it up, Talkspace.com. I'm telling you, this is the place you go. They'll find a therapist. It's someone to talk to. If you're kind of feeling a little lost, you're having that off day, Talkspace.com. Go to Talkspace. All right, I am thrilled at today's guest. I was really looking forward to talking to her. She has been described by Newsweek as Silicon Valley's most powerful tech journalist. She is, without question, the most powerful tech journalist in the world. She's one of the busiest people in the world. She's contributing editor at New York. She's opinion writer for the New York Times. She's co-host of the podcast Pivot. She's the host of the podcast Sway, which has become, both Sway and Pivot have become podcasts of major consequence. She's got 1.4 million followers on Twitter. She founded the Code Conference. She is about the most important voice in tech today from the world of journalism. And thanks for joining. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, last we left off, you and I were arguing on Nicole's show a few months ago. Maybe it was even a year ago. We'll get back to that. But the first thing I ask all my guests is, what is the brand? What is the Kara Swisher brand?
What is the Kara Swisher brand? What were we arguing about? I'd like to remember.
We were actually arguing in that we were kind of coming from the same place. I was saying that obviously with the proliferation of all the untruths on social media, that at some point individuals themselves have to take a little responsibility. We abdicate everything and that people are idiots and that.
Sure.
Yes, obviously. And we're going to get into a lot of this today in terms of what has got to happen with the big tech companies, social media companies. But this abdication of any responsibility of any human having the ability to decipher between truth and fiction is one of the problems in and of itself. And, you know,
certainly
we really argue. But I'm not letting you off the hook. What's Kara Swisher brand?
Okay, I don't know. I think it's I think a lot of different things. I wouldn't say something like speaking truth to power, but I think I ask really good questions of powerful people, and I'm tough on them, but fair. I would say tough, but fair. If I had to pick a brand kind of thing in terms of, I ask what I think of as obvious questions, but what other people think of as tough, I guess I just, the obvious thing. And also trying to cut through a lot of the noise of talking points or whatever and get people to say what they actually think. I think one of the best brand attributes is to be able to do that. And one of the ones that worked really well this year was the CEO of Parler, who actually ended up speaking the quiet part out loud on my podcast the night of the attack on the Capitol, where I was a little bit emotional myself. And I asked him some pretty tough questions, and it ended up with him getting fired, the site being deplatformed, because he said that he didn't care. He didn't care on the night of this happening. And so the tech community. So I like to bring light to what people actually are thinking versus what they want to.
I think you're describing your attributes. I think the essence of your brand is the journalistic conscience for tech, for the, for tech, all things technology. You know what I mean? The accountability holder, the truth teller, and because you grew up in it, you're probably the only journalist that truly grew up with the guy, with the men and women who are shaping things. And you've talked about this in a lot of your interviews. You're able to see them in their short pants and not be kind of dazzled by their genius and their master of the universe-ness. And it, you come at it, and they know that, you know that, and everybody knows that.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's mostly men, by the way. It's not men.
You got to, you know, in this world, you got to.
I know you're being good. That was a very good.
It is, but particularly.
Yeah, I got that, but you don't have to in this case, because the numbers are what they are.
Yeah.
You know, I think, yeah, I think I did know them before. They were, I mean, I knew Jeff Bezos before he had any money, Mark Zuckerberg before he had any money, but Elon Musk way before he had any money. And so it's not just money, but money sort of gives you this armor of invincibility, I think. This vast wealth and power is very deceptive. And so I met them when they were just people. And so I see them as just people. And so I think I don't necessarily need to lick them up and down. I also don't need to trash them either. Right. I can sort of assess them very clearly. And I think that's a fair way to be. And I think that's one of the reasons they keep talking to me, is because I don't treat them any different than I did before. I don't give them extra claps, and I don't give them extra smacks necessarily, unless they do something particularly egregious.
I found in my life, coming from my previous background as an ad guy and managing clients and dealing with a lot of high power people, I've yet to meet the high power person that doesn't respect honesty and truth and somebody not kissing their ass.
Agreed.
They're actually thirsting for it because they're not surrounded. They don't get it. They just don't get it. And when somebody comes in and respectfully, keywords respectfully, and honors their position, says, let me tell you, whether you're in an advisory role or a journalistic role, I've yet to meet the big timer that doesn't react well to that.
Well, very good ones, unless they're deeply insecure. Sometimes they get mad about it. Sometimes they get irritated. But I think I have always felt that smart people like two things. One is the truth. And if you do it respectfully, like you said, and secondly, they want to have substantive conversations. Everyone's licking them up and down all day. They want something from them. They want money. They want a job. They want access or whatever it is. And I think you get to be distrustful. I get that. And you also get to sort of, you know, you're high on your own supply kind of thing. And you're like, if people tell you you're a genius all day and don't question you, you tend to be like, my decisions are great. And I've had that happen with whether it's, you know, Mark Zuckerberg or Elon. Elon's really actually a good person. He does push back, and you can push back on him, and it doesn't end your relationship. Although any one day could change. But I think smart people, and I think of Steve Jobs when I think of this. Everyone's like, why did he keep doing interviews with you? I said, because didn't have to. He could just ignore me. There was no reason to, both me and Walt Mossberg. But I think he enjoyed the conversation because he never got it with people who he pays, I guess. I don't know how else to put that. I'm not paid by him.
Oversimplified question, so please excuse me, but I'm just going to ask you to be an armchair psychiatrist for a second. Is there any through line? You've sat with Gates, you've sat with Jobs, you've sat with Musk, you talked to Hastings, you talked to Bezos, on and on and on. Obviously, they're all brilliant and whatnot. What else? What else, if we were doing a little kind of connect the dots, marries these people together?
I'm not so sure. They all have different motivations. I think what's really important is to understand what they need to let you know about themselves. Like, what is the most important thing? When I think about, say, someone like Steve Case, who started AOL, he wanted to be right. And he was largely about the way things were going to go. With someone like Elon Musk, he's always a contrarian, right? So he wants to take whatever position you take, he wants to take the contrarian. And he wants to sort of be a bad boy and wants to be naughty. Or I don't say that in a sexual way. It's just he wants to be the shit stirrer. If you understand that, you can talk with him in that way. Like, okay, this is what he's going to want to do. You know, some people, when I interviewed Barack Obama, one of the insights I had is when you got him angry, he actually answered the question better because no one got him angry because he's the cool guy, right? And so I irritated him. I purposely irritated him so that he would actually, and I was truthful. We were talking about encryption, and, you know, he gave a good answer once I irritated him, because I thought all day long, you're the president of the United States, everybody shakes their head and lets you go on. And so I think you have to just figure out what I don't think they're necessarily all the same. Mark Zuckerberg couldn't be more different than Jeff Bezos couldn't be more different than Elon Musk in terms of how they conduct themselves. But the only thing that's very different is they do stick to an idea better than other people. They're persistent in their pursuit, no matter what. And mm-hmm. so that they're all sort of like that. Like yeah. And they either get stuck in amber in that they're always right, which I think is a mistake for powerful people, mm-hmm. Or they move on and develop like a lot of them do. There's a couple people I think of like that, like Reed Hastings from Netflix.
I want to talk about Miro. Miro, very simply put, is a collaborative whiteboarding online platform created to help people visualize, discuss, and share work. It really is special. Look, it's just like, think about the whiteboard that hangs in your office. Consider Miro a blank slate where you and your team or friends can all work or play or something in between. You can write, draw, use videos, sticky notes, diagrams, or audio to conceptualize your vision. It is the ultimate whiteboard. It's the online whiteboard. It's where people get together and figure things out. Use it. I use it. I've used it very effectively. That's Hero. I'm telling you, this is the place to collaborate. It is the online whiteboard space. Miro is creating a revolution on how we create and collaborate. So join over 20 million users today. You can sign up and use Miro today for free. Go to Miro, that's miro.com/Donnie, to start your free account. Sign up today and take advantage of 3 free whiteboards with this exclusive offer. Go to Miro, that's miro.com/Donnie, and start using Miro today. There's no reason to delay. Look, I've built my whole life on creativity and collaboration and working with people. I use it, M-I-R-O. I'm telling you, this is the online whiteboard for you. Use it, I promise. I want to talk about Posty. You got to use Posty. Look, in the competitive world of advertising, marketers are always looking for an edge to accelerate growth and reach new customers and get results. Today, they're turning to the best kept secret in marketing, and that's Posty. It's direct mail reinvented for the digital world. Posty has transformed direct mail by adding all the digital marketing capabilities found in channels like Facebook, Google, and YouTube. It allows you to run direct mail like a digital marketer. I'm telling you, Posty, P-O-S-T-I-E. Posty's platform is a one-stop shop. Does it all for you. It builds audiences, sets up campaigns with A-B tests, approves creative and track results in real time. Think of it as your direct mail easy button. This is your direct mail universe. Posty integrates with your CRM, accesses data sets, and builds lookalike models from over 250 million U.S. consumers. With Posty, you narrow your on-target audience and reach customers you don't find through other channels. Unlike the old way of doing direct mail, Posty is fast, fully automated printing logistics solutions allow you to deploy campaigns in days, not months. Diversify your direct marketing and stand out with direct mail from Posty. Hurry and get your free Posty demo today by visiting posty.com/Donnie. That's posty.com/Donnie, D-O-N-N-Y. That's Posty, posty.com/Donnie for a free Posty demo. Posty direct mail, reinvented for the digital world. If you're selling anything direct, go to Posty. Trust me on this one. Do you get a sense they understand their responsibility? I mean, of course they talk the talk, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't want to keep lumping them together, but these guys—
They're not like each other.
Yeah. We can go one by one, but obviously mm-hmm. more than any other, I think in the history of America that I can think of, have business people had a more of a responsibility, yes. more of a potential impact on where we're going in the world. Do yeah. they get it?
Some of them do. I think one of the things I always say is there's no such thing as big tech. There's big tech companies. And power is, no matter what it is, power has impact when you have that much power. Some of them pretend they don't. Like Mark Zuckerberg often is like, let's talk about the community. I'm like, you're the only one in charge here with a stock situation that makes you the only decision maker.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to talk about we, give me half your stock and then let's talk about we. Then yeah. let's us make a decision together. And one of the things that's hard is that people tend to lump them together. So some of them sort of try to escape their power. Mark Zuckerberg is a very good example of this. He really literally is beginning to understand the impact he has, but really doesn't take responsibility. I would say Jack Dorsey kind of does. He uh-huh. does get it. He may make decisions you don't like, but he certainly does understand. I think Tim Cook understands, head of Apple. Uh-huh. I think Satya Nadella at Microsoft understands. I think Google understands, but doesn't do a lot about it. You know what I mean? They're yeah. still the most powerful. And so it depends on the person. I think the group of people who are most act like victims are the people at Facebook. They feel they're always like, how dare you? How dare you? How dare you turn us into villains when that's not what people are doing?
I always got that about Sandberg. It was something I've never met Sheryl, but I always felt there was this put upon this that are you kidding me? And and I've heard from so many women who had a negative reaction to the lean in thing. It was this this kind of disconnected, connected, like what? Lean in? Who?
I used to tell her, I said I wrote a sequel called Lean In and Fall Over.
Yeah.
which I think is funny. I know there's folks on Sheryl, and I know she is the closest to the advertising community. I get that because she was doing that along with a bunch of other executives there. But I always put everything back at Mark, right? Because he's, I always tend to look at who has the power, and Mark ultimately has full power of that company. And so but I think they often feel, they act like they're misunderstood. Like the whole thing around throwing Trump off, how they tried to foist it off onto the board, that oversight board that they created. And then the board threw it right back in their face. Like, we're not making your difficult decisions for you. And then they made a decision, right? Then they sort of, a two-year decision at least. So I think one of the things that to me, that's the most overly sensitive without a reason to be company. Everyone else does understand the power. I think they don't think they should be regulated anyway. Like, you look at this pushback over these six new bills that the subcommittee in Congress is working on, and they're all pushing back really hard because they are very problematic for these companies.
So I'm going to put you in charge of all this. Okay, you have a new title, the Czar of all things tech. Okay, and you're in charge now. I give you full power. We all know the problems. We all know the kind of the conundrums that you know, as far as regulation and responsibility and accountability, and yet free enterprise and First Amendment. We all know the stew. What goes in the stew? I need you to fix it. I need you to you have all the power right now.
I don't
now.
Have to worry about shareholders.
You have to understand reality, right? I'm putting you in charge right now. So you have this unique position that the subcommittees report to you. You're going to be able to legislate. You understand capitalism, you understand shareholder value, you understand all the moving pieces better than anybody, and have no skin in the game other than what's right and what's fair and understanding. Okay. What do we do?
First thing is a data bill, like the ability to use data and privacy bills, national data and privacy bills, because it really stops and starts with their ability to take all the data that's being collected and there's skeins of it and manipulate it and sell it in any way they want. There's no oversight to what they do with all this data. So essentially, we become cheap dates for these internet companies, which is like we get a map and a dating service and I don't know what else. And they get everything. They get the money, they get the data, they get the ability to monetize it. And so I think the first thing is to sort of aim at the heart of how they're making money and how it's sort of, and they don't have to pay for the impact of it. And so they're making money on advertising and people's data and information. And then they don't clean up the mess that they've made around misinformation and disinformation and hate speech. They let that go. And so the real cost of their business is being borne by the American people who cleaned up after the Capitol riots. Now, they're not the only problem in that situation, but they certainly are one of the players that created the situation that it led to. I mean, ultimately, Trump's language was the problem, but Trump got a free ride on all their platforms for a long time. And so they never pay the true costs of disinformation about vaccines, disinformation about whatever it happens to be that day. And there's a new thing around disinformation around AIDS drugs and stuff. And so I would start to charge them their real costs of what they're doing, just the way we charge the cigarette makers or the opiate makers. There's real costs having to do with their businesses. And so that's where I would start, is like get them in the pocketbook. And then the second thing is not let them buy things or be as big as they are. I might break up a few things in order to let innovation push through. Nobody's going to create a search service these days. There's a few coming, but it's hard. So nobody's going to create a social network. No one's going to create a massive national commerce network, because these companies are so powerful. It doesn't matter what you do, you can't break through with innovative new ideas.
And they have, and so beyond anything, they have so much cash, they can just always buy the next shiny toy.
That's what they're doing in Hollywood right now.
I mean, that's it.
That's what they're doing. They don't even have to buy Hollywood companies. They just outspend them for years and then watch them die. Like, that's really what's happening.
Regulation. We know that's probably right now. If I want to run an ad on CBS, I have to get through more clearances to run a detergent ad. If I say something, get something three times whitening than any of these platforms have as far as putting on, whether it's life and death things mm-hmm. like health or everything we know. Mm-hmm. So what do we do without trampling on, God forbid, the First Amendment and all the things that they stand with?
You know, I think it's been it's a big, you know, canard that this is about the First Amendment. One of the first thing that I like to stress with people, listen, Jim Jordan, if you don't mind, these are private networks. They are not public squares. Now, the Supreme Court may someday decide they are. Congress may decide to make them utilities. They are not right now. And therefore, we cannot trample their First Amendment rights to do whatever they want, right? People don't have a God-given right to say things on Twitter. They just don't. Right. They think they do.
Of course, you can't scream fire in a movie theater. I mean,
whatever. It's more than that. You just can't. It's a private, it's like you can't go into a restaurant and pee in the soup.
Right.
You can't get kicked. You can, but then you get kicked out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this whole idea that it's about not being able to talk, you're allowed to talk. You just can't talk here in this private space in the way you want to if you break their rules. And so that's the first, you know, the thing that it always gets lost, this idea. So and then the idea that there's no other outlets, that's a good thing to talk about, that they're too big. And one of the things I think Democrats and Republicans should be agreeing on is that you can say it's because, you know, conservative voices are being censored. By the way, there's no proof of that. There's none. Yeah. Like if there was proof, that would be great. I'd be happy to look at it. But there is no proof. Nonetheless, the way that you deal with that is to make these companies less powerful and central by breaking them up or allowing more innovation. If you're worried about their power, make more competitors. That's how I look at it. I'm a capitalist. They're kind of socialist the way they want to deal with this issue. But I think that's one of the main things. It's nothing to do with free speech. There's nothing going on here until, say, the Supreme Court rules that. Then we can talk. But until then.
So what is the mechanism? You get to walk into Zuckerberg's office and say, okay, dude, here is the accountability measure now. What does that system look like? It's so sprawling. It's all, what does it actually look like? It's easy to say accountability and responsibility and all that thing. Now you got to put it in place. You are the czar. You have the power to do it.
Imagine a New York Times where anybody could publish anything. Why is that allowed?
We're agreeing on the problem, and I think most sane people would. What I'm saying to you—
Don't allow it. Just pay for your cleanup. Clean up your stuff, and then it becomes less of an interesting business. If there are laws in place around privacy and how you use information, that'll go to the heart of— They'll start to make some choices. They can make choices. Look, they could kick off Donald Trump. They finally did. Yeah. The numbers are way down on misinformation. They don't have to create tools that create havoc. You know, it's sort of like, in a lot of ways, they can do whatever they want. And then we have to clean up the mess. And so I think that's part of it, is pay your fair share of the damage you're causing and clean up your systems. The sloppiness of their systems is really what's at the heart of it. If you know, I'll get arguments from tech people that it's so hard, this is difficult. I get it.
Bullshit.
I completely. But and they're also operating in a global world, by the way. That's the other thing, is they don't just operate in this country. But just if you want to just focus on this, because everything they do here has resonance elsewhere, unfortunately, because they're global platforms. But one of the things they have to do is stop abusing data of people. And you can see what's happening in China right now, what they're doing to Alibaba. They're ripping it apart and using it as a vehicle for government surveillance. That's what they're doing to Jack Ma, who is a great entrepreneur. And they've decided he has too much power. We can't do that in this country. But what we can say is, with the data that you're getting, you have to use it responsibly. You have to tell people, you have to opt in, for example. You have to opt in to do things. They would like you, like Amazon just had this thing that they have, if you have their device, their Echo, they were putting you into a neighborhood mesh system. Well, that's fine, but you should opt into it, mm-hmm. right? They can't just turn it on. They don't have any rules whatsoever. And so you're at the hands of their decision-making, even if it's benign, even if there's no security problem here. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Would you explain it to me? Can I make a decision whether I want to be part of a mesh network? It doesn't work if it's not a mesh, by the way. And so that's why they do it that way. So it's just a question of letting you make decisions. And then the second part that I think people don't realize is this is a systemic problem. It's not just the misinformation. It's not just the use of data without permission. It's also addiction and usefulness. You cannot not be online in today's society with any job you have of any consequence. You have to be online. And the pandemic has underscored this rather dramatically. And that's the trend that's headed there. Second part is, a lot of this is addictive at the same time. It's not just, it's a must have and it's addictive. So you have to use it and it addicts you. So that's a problem. So they have extra responsibilities the way that publishers have extra responsibilities, advertisers have extra responsibilities, and they have to start living up to those responsibilities.
I find even as a mature, I say that with quotes, adult, and or that mm-hmm. I it's actually spastic now. I'm sitting in a car, I'm just, whether it's something stupid on Instagram or the news, mm-hmm. like I can't, it just happens. It's and forget kids.
It's
obviously, you know, you have three kids. I have three kids. You have a mm-hmm. little one who's going to be dealing with this in the years to come. It's terrifying.
She calls it the moan. Yeah, can I look at the moan?
My kids, it's an appendage. It's not even a, mm-hmm. and this is all the stuff we all talk about as parents. When I watch my 14-year-old with her other friends, forget when she's alone, they're interacting through the phone. They're not mm-hmm. even, mm-hmm. is, it's just so we can go on for days about that. I'm going to ask a question about the cultures of the companies that I found fascinating. And mm-hmm. this kind of contradiction of what you think. My old agency was in the Google building. And it wasn't always the Google building. It was the, you know. In New York, 111 8th Avenue.
16th Street, yeah.
Yeah. And when the Google guys started coming in there, the Googleites, it got infested with it. Like the elevators mm-hmm. were filled with.
Tim Armstrong. Blame Tim Armstrong.
Okay, right. Every person that come in the elevator, it was almost a joke out of central casting. They all had their hoodies on, they had their flip-flops, they all had their food, mm-hmm. everything's with food, you know. And I remember going up to one of their offices and you in there is, you know, every health and beauty aid you need. The irony is they are more the man in the gray flannel suit with employees than mm-hmm. even in the 50s. You know, we look back and we say, oh, those homogenous workers, and there was nobody there thinking of themselves. Yet these companies that sell themselves on mm-hmm. individual thought and worker sensitivity, they have co-opted mm-hmm. more of the souls of their people through clever accoutrements than was ever done in the 50s. And
I'd agree.
I kind of saw it up close. It would give me the heebie-jeebies, actually.
Really? It's interesting because, you know, they're about as diverse as a country club in Greenwich, Connecticut. Yeah. I mean, it's like, give me a break on that one. I mean, one of the things, every group has its little things, like advertising does, journalists do, looks and feels and stuff like that. But what's interesting about tech is that what you're talking about is the ability to juvenilize its employees has always been something that's stuck with me.
Well put.
Whether
well put.
Really soft seating or fleece outfits that they have that they give to each other, the food that's available, it's all comfort type food. Mm-hmm. It's often children's food. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. food. I remember being at a party for one of the Google executives and it was all children's food. And right. I was like, and someone's like, would you like an applesauce? I'm like, no, I'm not 12, like four. Like I would like a food, like right. adult people food. And so, you know, they had a bouncy house. They're just, right. they live in this perpetual adolescence or even earlier. I would say maybe 8.
That's really and interesting, so, that juvenile quality.
And bicycles of multicolors and, you know, everything. I used to joke when they were, all these startups got started in San Francisco because they test them there before anything else. For a period, I called it assisted living for millennials. It's like laundry service.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, and here comes your food. Some of it's great. The delivery stuff is kind of great. You know,
well, it's meant to keep you working 24 hours a day and take your soul away. I mean, it's just like,
but it's also meant to put you in a soft place where they, you know, there's nap pods. Like there's nap pods. Well, who takes naps? I mean, I like naps myself.
Yeah, but, I'm actually a big napper, but not at work, right? I mean,
nap pods at work. It's just like okay.
Yeah. No, there is that you are. Articulate incredibly well, and I always found a certain dastardliness to it, and
these children of the corn.
Yeah,
that's what I used to call them.
Really, really is. Hey, I want to shift a little bit to the Kara Swisher story. The early on, I was reading up about you. The two things that you said really kind of formed your approach in so many ways was losing mm-hmm. your dad, or at a very, very early mm-hmm. age. You talk about how. That, you know, you kind of survive that, you can survive anything. And being gay, we're like, you don't like Muslim, mm-hmm. gay, fuck you, I don't give a shit. And it kind of mm-hmm. permeates everything else. That I found both those things really fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think one of the things people, you know, when you have essentially what's a disaster, which was the death of my dad when I was 5, it really does form you in that nothing really is going to be that bad of half your life. When I was very young, you know, changes so dramatically and in such a tragic way. He was very young, he was 34. And I was so close to him. One of the things that was astonishing is when my oldest son was 5, I realized how close we were and how the devastation on myself probably was, you forget, right? When you're 5. But I was sort of like, wow, I really probably was around. So I think it put in me like, look, nothing can happen this bad. Like I can handle anything. And I think it's a, a lot of people who lose children, lose parents at a young age are like that. They're called highly functional.
Yeah.
So I tend to be like, you know, you could die at any time and I'm going to go ahead and do stuff. That's one thing. And the second thing is, I have so much time on this planet and I'm not going to waste my time doing stupid things. Like I move along rather quickly if I don't like something. So that's two things. It's if there's a positive to get out of a negative situation. And then with being gay, it's like, oh, you know what? They don't like me. So what? I'm not going to spend all my time being one of these ladies that tries to please. You know what I mean? Yeah. And not that I'm rude to people. I get along with men, I think probably better than many women. And I have sons I spend a lot of time thinking about men and how they behave, and especially when I'm raising two of them. And so I think a lot about like not pleasing anybody. I'm not here to please you or please men or please. But I think a lot of women get sort of stuck in this good girl kind of thing. Like, I don't want to make too much noise. They might not like me. They may think I'm a bitch. I don't really care. And then I'm not really a bitch. So I don't know. It just seems to work out pretty well.
You're a few years younger than me. I'm 63. You're in your, we'll say mid-50s. Okay. People growing up gay today, particularly in cities, it's a non-event. People don't understand. Yeah.
Everybody's gay.
That's for another show.
No, but it is. Like, you meet young people.
How it didn't exist. It, like, when I was growing up, it was, you literally had Liberace, this caricature who was flamboyant. It didn't.
And they pretended he wasn't gay.
Yeah. I did a commercial in 1993 for IKEA where it was the first time we showed two dudes shopping for furniture, you know, very matter of fact and whatnot. Yeah. There had never been a gay depiction in advertising before. It didn't exist. And the letters I got, both the love and the hate letters. And so people today take for granted that how challenging it is and was. And my agency always had a huge, huge, huge gay population. So I just, at a very young age, just got it. Whereas you just really understood how hard and different it was 20, 30, 40 years ago versus today.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone. I was like, oh, I used to have two beds, you know, with your roommate, with your, you know, quote unquote roommate that you live with, and you'd have two beds in two different rooms. It's ridiculous. The stuff I wasted time doing, and I didn't do much wasting time. I actually was out pretty early. But it's really fascinating the kind of like things you allow other people to make you be because of mores at the time. It was always wrong. And by the way, all those gay people were always there. They just had to be the person they were. Right. And I think that happens not just with gay people, but all marginalized populations have to edit themselves. And in editing themselves, it's a tax on them. It's a constant tax, whether if you're a woman, you have a tax. If you're a gay person, you have a tax. If you're a person of color, you have a tax. Yeah. And then there's people who pay
taxes. If you're a white man, you have a tax.
And by the way, that's the case. Did you read that ProPublica piece? It was all tech people, of course. Right. They like make money and then they borrow money against the stock. And then they like give themselves a dollar and give themselves a PR victory about making a dollar. And then, of course, taking a dollar means they don't have income that therefore they don't get taxed on. Mm. The whole thing is just, it's just, if it wasn't so pathetic, it would be comic on some level.
Bill Maher did I thought it was a really interesting monologue a couple of weeks ago about progressophobia. Did you happen to catch this? Mm-hmm. About the.
But I've heard it from Bill. Bill, that's Bill's thing. That's his like little.
It struck a nerve with me in that progressive. Mm-hmm. I'm coming off our conversation, how far we've progressed in terms of sensitivity to a gay lifestyle. And we could say the same thing about race. We have so far to come. Do you agree with this thesis that this woke world still can't appreciate? Yeah, we have so fucking far to go, but like where we've come, there's been a lot of good things that have happened.
Sure. Sometimes I argue with Bill. Like I've been on the show a couple of times, and there's a couple of things we don't agree on. I do think this idea of like attacking, I think liberals tend to attack themselves first. Like you never see a Republican, no matter how heinous a Republican is, they tend to defend each other rather strongly. They have a strong sense of the group as more important than the individual. And allow things to happen. I think there is a lot of, like, look, having been a gay person over these past 30, you know, 40 years, it's like amazing. Like, it's astonishing of the things you're allowed to do. But although the word allowed, the fact that I'm using the word allowed is really problematic, but it was allowed. It was not allowed. And so, or the price you paid was rather high, you know, in order to do it. Ostracism or whatever, and people, even worse for many people. And so I think to appreciate how much it's come, yes, absolutely should. On the other hand, it's still awful for so many people, and so many, truly is. And so one thing that happens is when, you know, look, broadly speaking, white guys get like chastised for something. They want to move on. Okay. I get it. Okay. Let's move on. And it's like, let's not move on for a minute. Let's be mad for a minute. They don't let these groups be angry for just a little bit. It's sucked. Let me just say, being a gay person 20 years ago, it sucked. I'm still mad.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a little mad for a little longer, and you're going to have to friggin' take it for a little bit. I think at some point we'll, as people are equalized, which they aren't right now, people will feel better. But what you're seeing in the Black Lives Matter movement across these protests is anger, like at this, that this continues, and it's okay. And it's not threatening all your things, because you won't, your things will not be taken. Mm-hmm. This whole backlash, and Bill kind of represents that. And I think he's hysterically funny, and I agree with a lot of stuff he says. But when he talks about like, oh, the woke people, I'm like, what's the opposite? Asleep? Like, okay, let's be asleep. Like, that is the opposite of woke.
No, I think the thesis behind it was a little cheerleading along the way is okay. You know what I mean?
Celebrate things. Yeah. I think what the problem is, when you celebrate, you may lose faith in the things that need to change.
There can't be any victory laps. There's a difference between a victory lap and a, pat on the back, we're going in the right direction.
I feel pretty good about being gay right now. For me, at least, not for everybody, for sure. What's happening to trans people across this country right now with these, there's 100 bills in 38 states that are just one heinous thing after the next in this day and age.
In this day and age.
Post-Trump. Yeah. It's not pre-Trump. It's not during Trump. It's post-Trump. Come on.
Speaking of fearless leader, you and I were two of the first, and to me it was such a duh, and I got this from Michael Cohen also, that Trump was not going to leave office, that Trump was going to, I remember saying that on Morning Joe early on, and it was like a big deal. You were there also.
He has to.
And it was so obvious. It was such a duh. Give me the prognosis going forward. We're still in a world where 75 million people voted for Trump. We're still in a world where, although now DeSantis in the latest straw poll,
that must be something happening in Florida down there.
Yeah. Where do we fit into now we're not in a post-Trump world. We're in a world that doesn't have him as president anymore. Give me a little prognosis of the next few years for the Republican Party and what's going to happen.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I wrote a column in 2019 in mid to that. I said, look, I was talking about how dangerous he was on Twitter and that they weren't doing anything about it. I said, let me give you a what for. Mm-hmm. What if he loses the election? I literally wrote this. I said, what if he loses the election and he starts to lie about the election for weeks and weeks and weeks, and he continues his lies, and then he tells his followers to do something about it, and they attack somewhere physically. And literally, I'm not any kind of like Nostradamus, but it was pretty easy to see where this was all going. I think one of the things that drove me crazy initially when he was a candidate was the making fun of him. If you remember, the Huffington Post put him in entertainment.
Yeah.
I was like, no, he is very popular.
That. Yeah.
And he's very canny. Like, don't like call him dumb. I was always like,
I know it annoys me also. He might be unsophisticated. He might be unworldly.
He's not.
He ended up president of the United fucking States. And I know him as well as anybody knows him. He's the farthest thing from dumb.
I was one of the only people who watched every episode of The Apprentice. So I got his appeal. His self-deprecation, his humor. Yeah. You may not find it funny. He's a huge racist. There's no question about it at this point. And so it doesn't matter. Like, so were a lot of people. And especially when around the sexual harassment stuff, which was really interesting. And everyone was like, oh, now we got him. I'm like, no. Because now you're saying to a lot of women who've put up with shitty men that you're stupid. Like, I was like, don't attack those women who are voting for him, because you're talking about the choices they make.
Sure.
And so I think right now to make him into a buffoon is a very dangerous thing for, I'm not terrified of him, but he's definitely a political force, and he keeps coming. Like, he doesn't stop. He's fueled by insecurity, obviously bad parents, some bad parenting happened there. If I interviewed him, my first question was like, what happened with you and your parents? Because I really want to know, if he would ever tell the truth.
The dad was a bad dude, man. He was a bad dude.
You know, bad parent. You can tell. Yeah. I'm a parent of a lot of children, and you are too. And so, you know, I think that to count him out is a problem. And the fact that the way the Republican Party is going along with everything he says now around election lies or voter registration, or even Mitch McConnell, who abhors him, you can see that. I mean, he can barely suppress I hate this guy. And so I think that he has an enormous influence until he loses his ability to influence things, right? Until people get tired of the show. That is the only thing that will stop him from
it's
being
influential. It's going to take another loss or two. That's what I keep saying.
He has to lose a lot.
There's got to be a loss in the midterm. And if they're stupid enough to put him up again, he'll lose
again. They have the whole right-wing social media thing going. Yeah. Look what they're doing to Fauci right now. I just did an interview with Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci. And he's made some mistakes, no question. But the stuff they're piling on him is because they can't get Biden right now. Biden seems not, they're not able to like
they can't lay a glove on him. They can't lay a glove on him.
But Fauci, they can. He's their Hillary. He's their next Hillary.
Biden, it is just, he has been pitch perfect. And they can't go after him because he's this... He's Uncle Joe. You know, it's so much of it is grandpa. The tone and manner of everybody.
Grandpa.
Yeah. And
there's mean grandpa and nice grandpa.
And he doesn't give them any of the crazy
none
to fund the police to go after. I mean, he knows exactly what
it is. He's all smooth edges. You fall right off of him.
Yeah. It's just amazing. So the million dollar question, and I, because you really are more than anything, you study people. In your work, it's like you understand that Facebook is not Facebook. It's a guy named Mark Zuckerberg and all his pathos and all the things he brings to the table, everything with it.
Yeah.
So what is the nerve? It's so easy to say race, and it's so easy. I have a theory on it, on what, despite all of this, why ostensibly 40% of this country says, check, yeah, I like that guy, Trump. What's the nerve? It's certainly not policy, because there is no fucking policy. And it's always, oh, it's a cult, it's this and that. But what's the nerve? What's the real, if I was going to say, give me a little paragraph on the nerve he hits.
I have a lot of family members this.
So they're obviously you have many discussions about this.
Yes. They're tired of being told they're stupid. And even if they're stupid, and a lot of them, let me just be honest, are. They are. Sometimes you're like, that's not right. They're tired of, things have gotten less good for them, and they need to blame someone rather than themselves, right? There has to be some other reason my life isn't what it turned out to be.
You articulate exactly what I say, that and if you hit on the majority of people are unhappy with their lives, and you're able to say, it's not your fault. Your life sucks. It's the brown guy's fault. Yep. It's the media's fault. It's the rich guy's fault. It's this. That trumps, no pun intended, everything else, because you are giving somebody.
It does.
And
he articulates that very well. Yeah. I think he does. And he promises him a better life. And he uses fear. Fear works just as well as hope, by the way. They both work. You know, if Barack Obama was hope, this guy was fear. And fear is effective. Like that guy, that's the reason you don't have a job. And they don't want you to be complexity is hard to do these days because everything, because of social media, is so reductive. It's so like you can't have a complex argument about the Wuhan lab leak. You can't, right? You can't, even though some of the scientists think it, some of them don't. Let's investigate. Instead, it's all Twitter screaming by people who aren't doctors or scientists or anything else. And so that's what he does really well, is he gets down to the very base impulses of people not to blame themselves for the state of affairs. And I think, my mom is like this, watches, of course, Fox News helps. I think it's propaganda. I think a lot of cable news is not just Fox, by the way, but Fox is particularly propaganda. And she just doesn't have any other information sources. So we have a poor information diet. We have people who are frustrated with their lives. They have to blame someone. And ultimately, at the very bottom, nobody likes poor people. You know what I mean? He takes these, he like looks like, I'm successful. I can show you how to get here.
Sure.
And so the way we treat people who in this country, since the beginning of this country, not just marginalized people who can't quite make it, is not to help them, not to be kind to them, it's their fault for being where they are, rather than the education system has abandoned them. The food system has abandoned them. They're sort of mired in bad nutrition and everything else. And we don't, we have a through line throughout our history where if you don't like, do it yourself or else you don't. I just think a lot. I know it sounds dumb, but I think about the Whiskey Rebellion. Go study the Whiskey Rebellion. Hamilton is the one who put it down. Fascinatingly, it was about people who just didn't want to be part of a community, a bigger country. They didn't want to pay the taxes that it cost. And I think there's a through line in this country about that. And Donald Trump is the personification of that to me. And that's why I take him completely seriously. Everything he says. I pay attention to him. He's also a buffoon, but that doesn't matter.
But that doesn't take away this. All right, last 2 minutes, I like to do a thing called, it's like a brand audit where I throw out a brand. Sure. Just give me one thought that comes to you. Just describe it in its essence, okay? I want to go through some of tick them off. Microsoft.
Great stock. Really good. Really smart. Smart.
Google.
Smart. Challenged innovatively.
Facebook.
Dangerous.
Amazon.
Overwhelming.
Bezos.
Most fantastic midlife crisis ever.
I had him on my old big idea. I don't know if you remember. I had a show on CBC for a bunch of years.
Yeah, I did, of course.
And I had him on when he was just selling books, and he was a little nerd with
Pleated pants, the pleated khakis. Oh,
like a dweeb. If you look up in the dictionary, dweeb, there he was. And now
nobody wore pleated khakis like
he did. And he's got the shaved head and the girlfriend and the whole thing and the buff.
Fantastic. And he's going to space. Like,
I know. It's amazing.
I don't know what he's going to do next. He's going to like buy a mountain and blow it up. I don't know.
It's just incredible. Yeah. It's just incredible. Yeah. Bill Clinton.
I'm not a fan.
No, history is not going to be kind to him. And I think particularly when this Epstein stuff comes out more and more and more, it's just
that stuff on top of the don't ask, don't tell. I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I like his wife though. I'll tell you, I like her a lot.
Yeah. It depends on the day for me, for Hillary. Hey, I appreciate Kara. I so enjoy this. You're so bright. You're on, you got the white hat on, you're doing all the good stuff. And I know how busy you are. I really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem, Donnie. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Kara Swisher and our brands of the week. Remember to always stay on brand and rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get podcasts, Spotify, Apple, anywhere. And also subscribe on YouTube. Go watch us on YouTube. You can see the video. And we'll see you next week. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Jim Jefferies. I have a podcast out called I Don't Know About That. Each episode is a different subject. We bring an expert on and I say everything I think I know about that subject. And then they correct me. Join in, listen to the podcast, you'll have a laugh, and you might learn something. Follow, rate, and review I Don't Know About That with Jim Jefferies, now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. You can also catch video releases each week on YouTube.